Arthur, welcome back to the show. How are you, man?
I'm good, Jason. How are you?
I'm excellent. So is that still in place as far as no negotiations after training camp?
As far as I know, it is. And that means that Thursday morning, when the team officially reports early in the AM, I believe it's 7 a.m. for physicals, that's the deadline for Ryan Strome to sign. And they're still holding to it, even though they've got new owners.
Now, interesting. Where do you see this negotiations going? Like, I don't know if Strome has that much negotiating power. What's he looking for?
I don't think they're too far apart in terms of term. You know, he's coming off his entry-level deal. So you certainly see, a 1 or 2 year, probably 2 year deal. He's represented by Newport. A pretty powerful agency, a big agency that's done lots of deals like this. So I don't think there's any sort of animosity going on here. It's just a player with no leverage looking to get as much as he can get, and a team that's starting to creep up against the cap that needs to keep costs down and sees a guy who had a great year 2 seasons ago, 50 points, pretty productive in the playoffs as well, and dipped down to 28 last. Spent some time in the minors, was a healthy scratch for a couple of their key games in the playoffs. So I don't think they're miles apart. And I think towards that end, Ryan Strome was in town today for the first time skating with some of his teammates. So he's ready to go when they get a deal done. And I think it may seem like the clock is ticking, but I don't think they're that far apart. And I still feel like both sides feel like they can get something done.
Okay. And the one thing about the NHL, as we know, they all function better on a deadline. We've seen it from contract negotiations to NHL. Unfortunately, the only time it doesn't seem to work, Arthur, is when it comes to CBA negotiations. Bettman just likes to have lockouts.
Exactly. General managers and hockey writers, deadlines are very important for all of us and get us going. So, they went down to the wire with Brock Nelson last year right before training camp, and that one did have a little bit of animosity to it, just a different sort of situation, and ended up signing a 3-year deal for a very manageable number. And I think the Islanders and Brock Nelson are both happy with that. Ryan Strome wants to be here. He's an enthusiastic guy. He knows he has a lot to prove after a pretty disappointing season last year. So I think he's eager to get in here and get it done. And the fact that he's here already is probably a good sign. And like I said, I think, you could see it ended up being 2 years, somewhere maybe in the 2-2.25 average value range. That would seem to be pretty fair. And if he's got something to prove, he's got a couple years to prove it before he gets back in the mix for another deal after that.
Arthur Staple joins us. Arthur, looking at the New York Islanders, made the playoffs last season. Unfortunately, couldn't get that series win that they've been chasing for such a long time. Jaro Halak, how cemented is he in your eyes as the number one, or is he going to be pushed this year?
You know, I think the way that he's playing right now for Team Europe is going to go a long way towards determining what happens with this crowded goaltending situation the Islanders have. They had it last year with Halak, missed a lot of time with some injuries, and then obviously the big injury when he injured his groin in March, ended up missing the rest of the season in the playoffs. Thomas Greiss, who started opening night because Halak was hurt, really had a breakout year. You know, he was a big reason why they made the playoffs. He was pretty much the main reason why they beat the Panthers in the first round of the playoffs. And then they have J.F. Berube, who, was really here all year because they were afraid of losing him on waivers. They'd picked him up off waivers because Halak was hurt right on the eve of last season. And all three guys are still back. I think there was a lot of question marks with Halak going into this training camp. Maybe they didn't even know that they were going to get them resolved with this World Cup of Hockey, because it seemed like Freddie Anderson was going to be Team Europe's goaltender. But Anderson gets hurt playing for Denmark. Halak comes up, gets the call in these first two games. And really, I don't think they could have gone any better for him or for the Islanders. Now they feel like they've got their old number one maybe back where he can be, fully healthy after off-season surgery. They've got Thomas Greiss, who obviously proved he can be a number one. So, they've still got some questions, but I guess they feel a little bit better about these questions that they're asking right now, because they've got a couple guys who they know can do the job, and maybe don't feel as pressured to get rid of one of them right away.
from what you saw last year in the postseason, where do the Islanders need to improve? And, you know, they lost Kyle Lapoza. They made a few interesting moves in the offseason. Do you believe they're better off, or where is that loss of Lapoza's offense going to come from?
You know, I think they feel like statistically, Andrew Ladd is a pretty decent replacement for Lapoza. He's going to be on the opposite side of John Tavares than Lapoza was. But really, Lapoza put up some decent numbers last year, pretty much not playing at all until down the end of the regular season in the playoffs, not playing at all with John Tavares. I think the Islanders saw that they weren't going to be able to retain Lapoza, or weren't interested in retaining Lapoza from day one of last season, and weren't really interested in having him play with Tavares and kind of upping his value, or they wanted to see what they had with Ryan Strome playing alongside Tavares at the beginning of the season. It obviously didn't work. So I think they feel like the numbers can be replaceable. Andrew Ladd has had some good numbers. He's played on the top line in Winnipeg. I think they feel like he can keep up with Tavares. And they brought in P.A. Parenteau, who was Tavares' running mate from a few years ago, a guy who pretty much made his whole NHL career playing with Tavares back when they were both a little bit younger. So I think they feel like they can replace Kyle's offense there. You know, I think the real spot they're going to be hurting is replacing Franz Nielsen down the middle. You know, he's a guy who was really did it all for the Islanders and was not a guy they were expecting to lose. And when he decided to go kind of in that last little stretch before, as July 1 approached, you know, they're going to try to move Ryan Strome back to center. They've got Brock Nelson, who has had some, you know, great first halves of the last two seasons and dipped a little bit in the second half in the playoffs. But that's going to be, a bigger hole to fill than the one that they're trying to fill with losing Kyle Lapoza.
And looking at Mikhail Grabowski, sounds he might not play at all this season. Concussion issues. What's the update on him?
You know, I saw him the other day at the Islanders practice facility. He's able to go in the gym for brief periods. He's not been on the ice. He's going to come in for physicals with everybody else on Thursday, but the expectation is he will not be cleared to do anything hockey related. And I think it's just going to be, you know, it's a sad situation. We've seen it before with guys like Mark Savard and Chris Pronger, guys whose careers are essentially over and still have their contracts on the books. You know, I don't know if you can say it's quite something that permanent yet. Grabowski's been able to come back from concussions a few times in just his two seasons with the Islanders, but he's had three pretty big ones, and you know, they certainly get more cumulative. We've learned through the, you know, from our educating all of us on the medical side of it, that each successive one makes it harder to come back than the one before it. So I don't think there's a situation right now where the Islanders think he's going to be a part of this team, other than a cap hit to either sell around the league when it gets down to, you know, he's still got 2 years left, or make space by putting him on long-term injured reserve if they need that cap space maybe later on in the season to acquire a player. But you know, he's a guy who's certainly grown to be beloved in a short time here. He's a funny guy, a very personable guy who's had some success when he's been able to be healthy, but that doesn't look like it's the case right now.
Arthur Staple joins us. You know, that's brutal news, and it's interesting you bring up Savard, because now the last Grabowski concussion, Arthur, how did it happen? Because I don't recall a major cheap shot or anything.
No, you know, his first year here, two seasons ago, he had a couple of whoppers. John Scott caught him pretty good, and there was another big one escaping me right now who hit him. But both clean hits, just big hits, and he's a guy who's, you know, he tries to be very creative with the puck on the ice and just hasn't learned to stay out of the danger areas. You know, you don't ever want to put the onus on a player for his own concussions, but it's a fast physical sport, and you just have, you know, there's sometimes you have to adjust the way you play. I think the one this year was later in the season, and it was not a major hit. And that's, you know, you think back my time early in my hockey writing career when I was covering the Rangers, and Eric Lindros, mm-hmm. you know, got one, he got his stick lifted and hit himself in the head with his own stick. And that was it. You know, it's something that didn't seem very major, but as we know, it doesn't have to be a huge hit to suffer something that leaves an after effect after you've had so many of them. And, you know, he wasn't able to get cleared, you know, saw some specialists, I think, back in the spring, tried to do a lot of different things. He's not a guy who feels his career is over. He's still trying to get back. He still feels like he has a chance to get back. But I don't think that's going to happen right now. And if he misses all of training camp and it starts to drag on, you start to wonder if he can ever even really catch up with a team that's going to try to go forward. You know, he's going to be around, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, like I said, a person that's counted upon to be a contributor, at least at the start of the season.
Jason Chimera, where do you see him fitting in on New York this year?
You know, it's funny how the three guys, longtime guys that left in Nielsen Oposo and Matt Martin, who are all very popular guys, very longtime Islanders. You see that kind of the one for one lad came in to replace Oposo. P.A. Parento essentially replacing Franz Nielsen. They're hoping for in terms of production. Obviously, Franz does a lot of different things than Parento does. But I think Chimera was the one that really slots in for Matt Martin. He's certainly not going to do what Matt Martin does. He's not going to lead the league in hits or fight to defend his teammates. But I think they feel like that bottom six gets a little bit more skill, a little bit faster with Chimera, who's you know, getting up there in age and 37, but still has the wheels and certainly, you know, had a probably an anomaly of a year offensively with 20 goals last year. But even if it's half that, that's, you know, that's a good Matt Martin year, 10 goals. So I think they feel like that bottom six, you know, obviously they had that fourth line that did a lot of damage and was always together with Martin and Casey Cizikas and Cal Clutterbuck. Maybe they feel like they put Chimera with Cizikas and Clutterbuck, and suddenly that line isn't one that's going to, you know, be a threat to knock you on your back, but really get in on you with speed. Those other two guys have speed and offensive skill. They signed Casey Cizikas to a very big contract, 5 years in the offseason, so I think they feel like he's a guy who's not just pegged as a fourth-line penalty-kill type guy. They just know they need to get up more offense from other places other than John Tavares, and adding Chimera into that bottom six mix, I think, really goes a long way towards that.
Last year, he had a career-high 20 goals, also got some power play time, and he admitted that helped him a little bit. Do you see him getting any second-unit PP time?
Certainly possible. You know, they've got some net front guys, guys like Anders Lee, who, you know, really fills that role in the top power play unit well. They've got Brock Nelson, who's done it before. But you just need guys that are willing to do it. And, you know, I think the Achilles heel of this Islander team last year was those young guys, Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Ryan Strome, who just didn't play up to their potential. And now they've got some veterans who can fill those kinds of roles, like Chimera. So maybe he's not the top choice to be on that second power play unit in front of the net, but you know, he's certainly someone who knows how to do it. So if he's available to do it, and some of the younger guys don't step forward, that's overall a bad thing for the Islanders, because they need that kind of core for those three young forwards to be much more productive than they were last year. But you've got some good fail safes, I guess, and guys like Chimera and Parento and Ladd, who have all played and had some good power play time on all of their previous teams.
Arthur, one last one. And my apologies, complete brain fart off the start when I said the Islanders hadn't won since 93 until, of course, they beat Florida this year in the first round. How much do you think that meant to the organization, you know, finally getting that off their off the resume, if you want to call it that long without even a playoff victory? And I know that, you know, they lost to Tampa Bay, who's a very good team, in the second round, 4-1. But did that kind of reignite the fan base? And then number two, what's the talk I'm hearing about them potentially getting out of their lease in Brooklyn?
Well, it was a huge series win. And just the way that they did it with three overtime wins in that series and really being outplayed for a lot of that series by Florida, who, you know, I think maybe in a situation the Islanders were a few years ago where had a very maybe surprisingly successful season, but weren't able to put it together in the playoffs. The Islanders are a group of guys, a little different looking group now, but a group led by Tavares who are learning how to, you know, push forward and take a new step every year. You know, you hope that if you're a fan of the Islanders, that they can take another step, maybe a conference final. It's obviously difficult to get past a Washington or a Pittsburgh in that Eastern Conference. But the Islanders, I think, have learned these last couple of years, it's not necessarily how you get there, it's what you do once you're there. You got to get in the playoffs, but where you finish is not that important. You need to be able to be going full steam and have the goaltending go well and have your best players playing well right from the start, and that can carry you through no matter how strange or ugly the games may look. So that was a big step, I think, not just for the fans, but for the organization, and also being their first year in Brooklyn. You know, it may not be too many more years, depending on what the new ownership wants to do. They are certainly looking for a spot around the Long Island or the New York City area to potentially put a new arena, where someplace they could call their own home, since they're really renting space in Barclays Center right now. And, you know, they do have the opt-out that that Newsday reported, that they can opt out after the third year, which is after next season. Even if they have a deal in place to put a new building down, whether it's over by Citi Field where the New York Mets play, or maybe out by Belmont Park out on Long Island where the horse racing track is, the key is they got to play somewhere between the time that building is finished and, you know, between the time they sign and the time the building is put up, which is going to be several years. New York is not an easy place to just sort of railroad things through and get a new building built. So, you know, they could make a new deal in a couple of years with Barclays just to extend it by 3 or 4 years until their own building is set. But we'll have to see what happens. I think either way, they've got to play somewhere in the next few years. So anyone hoping for a quick exit from Barclays may have to wait a little bit.
Arthur, as always, excellent stuff, man. I appreciate your time.
You got it, Jason. Anytime, my friend.